This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, December 12, 2011, and I'm Iti Agnihotri Mundholkar. On today's show, we speak with author Kristin S. Kaufman about her book, Is This Seat Taken? Also, the University of Arkansas prepares to host its first fall commencement in 40 years this Saturday, and more on blues artist Calvin Levy today in Arkansongs. But first, more than 60 new houses have been constructed across a five-county area of north-central Arkansas by first-time homeowners with little access to collateral, a moderate credit record, no down payment, and lots of sweat equity. The program is called Mutual Self-Help Housing. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Michael Valentin's framing in an arch window on a new three-bedroom home in northwest Berryville. He's a construction supervisor for the Mutual Self-Help Housing Program.
Yeah, it's a great situation for everybody. Yeah, it brings jobs to other subcontractors, and these people get a new home for less than what they could normally get one.
And for many, securing a mortgage in these times is way out of reach. The owner of the new home is not here today, but her neighbor, Yolani Franco, is helping out, part of the mutual labor aspect, wearing a gray hoodie this frigid morning to stay warm. She's a single mom with two children. Her home, also under construction two doors down, will be done soon.
Hopefully in 3 months, at the end of February, we should be done. Hopefully, if nothing else.
And do you have construction skills yourself?
No, but I'm learning a lot.
Like nailing trim, for example. She's also learned to read floor plans, which are tacked up nearby on a wall support. She says her children are excited to move into this pleasant forested neighborhood.
Yes, I like it. It's quiet. It's nice. I met some of the neighbors, and they're pretty nice people.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Three new homes are being built on this lot. Wearing bright yellow coveralls, Nathan Holloway is also helping out. His house is being constructed over by the fairgrounds.
It's a three-bedroom house. It's going to be really nice when it gets done. It's a lot of work put into it, but it's getting there. I'm just very thankful. I'm glad things are working out the way they are.
Thanks to Vicki Stratton, director of the USDA Mutual Self-Help Housing Program, which provides low-interest sweat equity construction loans.
It's going to have a safe room. So in case of a tornado, which I know we're always concerned about, if there's enough money in the budget and we can make it work out, we can actually build a safe room, which is going to be a room that's going to be still standing once the tornado blows through. And this one is actually located in the garage of this house.
Outside on what will soon be the front lawn, Stratton says there's nothing better than helping families acquire their first home.
Just for a single parent or married couples or elderly retired, we've got all diversity, and everybody is that we help get into a home, and you know, at the end they cry, we all cry.
Five mutual self-help programs operate in this state of Arkansas: in Little Rock, Fort Smith, Arkadelphia, Russellville, out of Nashville, and this one, which covers seven counties: Carroll, Newton, Searcy, Marion, Boone, Baxter, and Madison County, just added to the region. Vicki Stratton is based in Harrison at the Northwest Regional Housing Authority.
Our homeowners and our families, our applicants, actually get a loan through USDA Rural Development, and it's a 33-year loan. The interest rate is locked in. Right now, the interest rate is 3.25% for the lifetime of the loan. Our families do have to put in 25 hours of their own sweat equity, and that's their down payment. So they're not having to come up with, you know, 10% or 20% of cash, because they're going to put in some hours as we go through the program.
That's 25 hours of donated time per week, primarily after work or on weekends. Accepted applicants are assembled into kind of collectives, working together to complete all the homes. Friends and families can also contribute equity. Skilled volunteers are also welcome, especially to help disabled participants. If unskilled, owners can opt to do things like maintenance, upkeep, and painting. But handy applicants can help with exterior work, like framing and interior finish work. The construction supervisor coordinates everyone. Plumbing and electric subcontracted on bid. But owners have a lot of say, including site location.
They do get to pick the location that they're going to get to build at. They get to pick house plans. But all that has to come in within a budget and a total loan amount.
Most applicants who tend to be unbanked don't have much credit, and they don't need to put up any collateral.
What Rural Development wants to know is that you've been trying to make payments on anything you've got out there. They don't go by a credit score. Once again, they just look and see what your credit looks like, and we can answer any questions that are there with that. And we have lots of people that, you know, may have credit issues, but you know what, they've decided this year's the year I'm going to make a difference. And we look at those dollars. We actually manage their budgets. We work with them, work with their budgets one-on-one. We actually control, you know, the dollars, so we know where every line item's going to be going. We also work with our homeowners as far as before they get into the home. We actually have classes and we work with them on maintaining their home, making timely house payments. We work on budgets. We counsel them on every aspect of being a homeowner.
Vicki Stratton walks first-time home applicants through the long, complex process.
As far as getting into the homes, you're actually going to get into your house for no money down. You are going to have to come up with approximately $375, $400 for builder's risk insurance. That has to be paid before we can start construction on your home. And then 6 to 8 months later, when you get ready to move in, you're going to have to come up with your homeowner's insurance. That runs anywhere from $600 to $800. Really depends on location, depends on your credit. Hopefully, we've been good during that time frame still. But actually, to get into these homes, you're going to get in for probably right at less than $1,000, $1,200. So those are going to be the upfront dollar commitments that you're going to have to the program. Now, we have lots of families that, because of their low income, will qualify at a 1% interest rate. So that being said, I mean, I see payments anywhere from $300 to $500 to $600. You know, so this may be close to what you're paying in rent every month.
Since 2004, 66 homes have been constructed collaboratively.
No one moves until everybody's finished. So if we have six houses in a group, everybody has to kind of move everybody along and get motivated to get to the point where we're actually completed and you get to move in all at the same time. And usually, like I said, it's whatever time you've got to give, but you know what? It's 6 to 8 months and you get a house.
In 7 years since the program started, only one home has been abandoned. The rest of the families continue to make payments and meet all obligations. Homes can be built in rural areas, but they must have access to public water. If the land is donated, then the USDA construction loan will pay for a well to be drilled. Most homes tend to be two-bedroom, two-bath, 1,200 square feet, with a yard and garage. In the $100,000 range, all Energy Star efficient, and families can choose their neighborhood. Like this pretty faux brick home in a very nice neighborhood on a mountain on the northeast side of Berryville.
That they just moved in August, so they're going to be celebrating their first Christmas here. It's a four-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage house. It is all brick, stucco, and it's got white trim. And we actually have snow on the roof this morning.
And everyone likes to be in their cozy home for Christmas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit nwregionalhousing.org or contact Vicki Stratton at 870-741-5522. The University of Arkansas will hold its first fall commencement in 40 years this Saturday. The ceremony will honor undergraduate, graduate, and law students who graduated toward the end of the summer or fall semester this year. University of Arkansas Registrar Dave Dawson says it was really the students who drove the revival of the tradition.
The ASG worked last year to work with the students, did a survey, asked students about a fall commencement, and there was a lot of positive response. Students wanted it. They said they would attend it if one was offered. And so we began working on setting one up for this fall. So it was very student-driven.
According to Dawson, the biggest advantage of hosting a commencement ceremony in fall is that students who graduated in the summer or fall semester this year can walk across the stage and get honored as soon as they graduate instead of waiting almost a year to do so.
You know, for the spring commencement, it will certainly maybe lighten that a little bit, having the fall graduates go in December. So I think it'll benefit us in that way as well.
Approximately 650 students are expected to participate in the fall commencement this year. Dawson says most universities similar in size to the U of A have traditionally held fall graduation ceremonies, but the last fall commencement exercise in Fayetteville was held in 1971.
Between 1948 and 1971, we did have what were called winter commencement exercises. Generally, they were in January or February. And why those stopped, I actually don't know why they stopped in 1971. My guess is they sort of began in 1948 because of a larger student population being on campus from the GI Bill and things like that, that increased our student population.
The program, according to Dawson, will be similar to the university's spring commencement ceremony.
Of course, we'll have the processional. We'll have each college students walk across the stage and receive their diploma covers and take their pictures. And all that will be very similar. We still have honorary degree recipients at this ceremony, and so there'll be two of those. And so otherwise, the ceremony itself will be very similar to what you would see in the spring with the all-university ceremony, except that all students, undergraduates, graduates, and law students, will be recognized at this one.
The University of Arkansas will honor one of the original Little Rock Nine, civil rights activist Ernest Green, with a Doctor of Humane Letters degree, and longtime Arkansas Congressman John Paul Hammerschmidt with a Doctor of Laws degree. Both honorees will address students and audience members during the ceremony. The commencement exercise will begin at 9 a.m. and doors to Barnhill Arena will open at 7:30 a.m. to the public.
Students begin checking in at 8 a.m. and the security for the event will be very similar to an athletic event. So there's no strollers, no umbrellas, no wrapped gifts, anything like that that will be allowed in the arena. And guests can enter from the east, south, or north side of Barnhill Arena. And parking will be in lot 44, which we call the pit, on the north side of the football stadium. And we'll have parking in the Stadium Avenue garage as well. So there should be plenty of parking for guests there. And disabled parking will be in lot 59, which is right next to Barnhill Arena.
For more information on the Fall 2011 Commencement Ceremony, visit registrar.uark.edu. Click on Graduation to view details of the event and parking maps.
Earth, Sky.
In December of 2011, astronomers announced the discovery of the first planet in the habitable zone of a star similar to our Sun. They're calling the planet Kepler-22b. It's 600 light-years away.
Today we have the first time that we have such something much closer to a true Earth analog, that is a planet orbiting with a period of roughly 1 year around a Sun-like star.
That's astronomer Alan Boss of the Carnegie Institution of Science, a member of the Discovery team.
It's a bit bigger than the Earth. It's about perhaps two and a half times as large as our Earth is, and it certainly is orbiting at the right distance so that it could have liquid water on its surface if it does indeed have a watery composition. Basically, the surface temperature is pretty much like a spring day on Earth, roughly 72 degrees Fahrenheit.
Planet Kepler-22b is very far away. Light from its sun takes 600 years to reach us here on Earth. Ellen Boss spoke of NASA's Kepler Space Telescope, the instrument used to make this discovery. It's slated to end its mission soon, but astronomers want to extend the mission.
And if it really does get that extra extended mission for more years, then Kepler really will be able to measure right down to Earth size at Earth-like orbits.
To learn more, visit earthsky.org and search for Kepler-22b. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
It's Monday, December 12th, 2011. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Matholkar, and with me in the Harold and Blanche Clark News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Hello.
Hello. I have to say happy birthday to Debbie Miller, who is my predecessor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers as features editor. I hate you. You know why. Okay. A look at what's going on around the area.
Okay.
Cirque du Soleil has a new production called Dreleon, a touring show that is in North Little Rock for a two-day run tomorrow and Wednesday. The show combines Eastern and Western traditions and looks for harmony between humans and nature. Mm-hmm. So saith Kevin Kinder, who wrote the cut line for the photo that goes with this that you can't see. They're at Verizon Arena, and tickets start at $30 at 800-745-3000. And around the area, mm-hmm. Trans-Siberian Orchestra is at the BOK Center in Tulsa on the 16th.
Okay.
Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band at the American Airlines Center in Dallas on the 17th. The Trans-Siberian Orchestra is also in St. Louis on the 17th and at the Sprint Center in Kansas City on the 18th. And the Stephen Curtis Chapman Story Tour is at the Independence Event Center in Kansas City on Christmas Day.
All right.
You can find out more every week about those things and what's up.
Okay. Thank you, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas.
Oh, no, I won't be the last to cry.
Calvin Levy was born in Scott by the Lonoke and Pulaski County lines in central Arkansas. Like many mid-level blues performers of the 1960s and 1970s in Arkansas and other southern states, he recorded several singles for small regional labels. Opening this episode of Arkansas is I Won't Be the Last to Cry, which shows Levy's soulful Sam Cooke side.
I know there's someone new that you have within your view.
Far, Levy's biggest song was Cummins Prison Farm.
Said they sent me to prison down at Cummins Prison Farm.
Written by Bill Cole, it hit the top 40 of Billboard's R&B Hot 100 chart in May 1970. Recorded in Little Rock in 1968, Cummins Prison Farm was originally issued on Calvin Brown's Soul Beat label out of Stuttgart in Arkansas County. Little Rock's KOKY radio station helped break Cummins Prison Farm, but with the song's raw sound, WDIA in Memphis wouldn't play it. Shelby Singleton, best known for owning Sun Records in the 1960s, reissued the song on his Silver Fox label. Cummins Prison Farm became more of a jukebox and club hit than a radio favorite. Blues music scholar Jim O'Neill noted the song was one of the rare hit blues singles of the last 25 years and had remained a standard. It became Calvin Levy's most enduring song, perhaps in part due to his ironic circumstances since he became a prisoner at Cummins. But Calvin Levy was more than just a blues one-hit wonder. His recordings could delve into straight R&B, gospel, and more.
The way you hurt me, baby, I enjoy being hurt by you. I just do now. The way you hurt me, baby, I enjoy being hurt by you. Oh, no. Since love is a hurting thing, go on and do what you wanna do.
At the time of Levy's charges, he was fronting the six-piece band Calvin Levy and the Professionals. The latter played such Little Rock clubs of the era as Bull Durham's, the Billionaire's Club, Calvin's Cafe, no relation, and the Party Lounge. Lee had also sung and played bass with the Arkansas Christian gospel group, the Zion Five. Lee Anthony, legendary owner of Little Rock's Soul Brothers record store and Soul Brothers recording studio, had worked with Levy for more than a decade, including recording him. Calvin Levy's vinyl releases continue to intrigue collectors from Japan, Europe, and beyond, in addition to Arkansas-ers. Although Cummins Prison Farm was of prime interest, deep listeners are rewarded with Calvin Levy's multi-directional talents. But it was old news to some. A Japanese album collected Cummins and several other Levy songs in 1976. Enjoy Being Hurt by You, heard here, has a funky R&B flavor and sounds nearly like Johnny Taylor, another Arkansas-born Sam Cooke acolyte. Here, Calvin Levy shows still another shade in his musical palette with the slow-burning Is It Worth All I Am Going Through? Vocals, Levy was also a skilled guitarist, and he covered a wide range of styles with his talents. Attempts over the years to get Calvin Levy back from behind bars, including a free Calvin Levy postcard campaign, were unsuccessful. Calvin Levy died June 6, 2010, at age 70, in the Arkansas prison called Cummins, he had lamented and immortalized in song. Despite his other music, for both his blues hit Cummins Prison Farm and his imprisonment there, the name Calvin Levy and Cummins are forever intertwined. Here in its entirety is Calvin Levy from Scott in Central Arkansas with Give Me a Love I Can Feel. Vocalist and guitarist Calvin Levy, a native of Scott in Central Arkansas, with Give Me a Love I Can Feel. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Michael Hiblin. For more information or to subscribe to the podcast, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large, and I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mutholkar. The Springdale Municipal Airport, located just east of the downtown area on Highways 412 and 265, is planning to expand its infrastructure to accommodate larger planes. Adam White with Carver Engineers in Fayetteville oversees the airport.
Like Drake Field and Bentonville's airport, Springdale is a general aviation airport, which means it doesn't get a whole lot of commercial service. In the area, it's really more for business and economic development. Springdale actually is one of the largest general aviation airports in the state. I believe it's third in based planes as far as the number of planes that are based on the field at Springdale. And it's really its role is to provide access for transient traffic, which is traffic moving, back and forth, out in and out of Springdale, and also to the base of operations for companies or private pilots that live in the area.
White says the city's Airport Commission's newly released year master plan, required by the Federal Aviation Commission every 10 years or so, projects concepts 20 years into the future.
So obviously the number one priority was the runway extension, which is a 394-foot extension of runway 36. And what this will do is allow two things. One is for larger planes to use the runway. Obviously, a larger runway length lets planes get in that are heavier and that have higher speeds because it's longer, it's safer to land on. And two, it allows existing planes that are based at the airport to take on more fuel before they take off. Because one of the big calculations in takeoff is how heavy your aircraft is. And if you are over a certain weight, then you can only take off at a certain length of runway. So if you lengthen our runway, they can take on more fuel, which is important because it lets them get farther away from Springdale on their trips. So if they have a long trip, they won't have to make an intermediate stop to get more fuel to get to their final destination. So those are the two big benefits of the runway extension. And then that trickles down to the businesses on the airfield. They can have bigger planes come in. They can have planes come in from further away to do business on the airport.
The airport will increase hangar development, access roads to those hangars, as well as a new instrument approach system to make things safer. The plan also calls for relocating a western parallel taxiway currently too close to the runway. No new land will have to be purchased for any of these planned improvements. Having an airport in the middle of town is novel, Adam White said.
That's one of Springdale's biggest benefits to the aviation community is being a downtown airport, because it allows people to get to their businesses and to the airport very quickly instead of having to go far out of town to get to it. It's all right there. So it's a very unique airport system, and we think it's a big advantage for Springdale.
The runway expansion is estimated to cost around $2 million. Other improvements would add up to an additional $6 million funded via the Federal Aviation Administration's Trust Fund, as well as the Arkansas Department of Aeronautics. Walmart Stores Incorporated, based in Bentonville, Arkansas, has launched an internal investigation to determine whether its overseas operations have complied with U.S. federal law regarding permits, licenses, and inspections. The world's largest retailer is examining its international operations to see if they meet with rules under the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. The act makes it unlawful for companies to bribe foreign government officials for business gain and neglect Securities and Exchange Commission accounting standards. Walmart's internal investigation of its overseas business came to light after it filed its quarterly report with the SEC on Thursday. In prepared statement read to us on Friday, Walmart spokesperson David Tovar said the company started examining its foreign business practices earlier this year.
Over the last few years, we have regularly implemented a series of changes to our U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act compliance programs to make them even more effective. This work is ongoing and continues today. As a result of information obtained during that review and from other sources, we have begun an internal investigation related to compliance with the FCPA. We voluntarily met with the U.S. Department of Justice and Securities and Exchange Commission to self-disclose the ongoing internal investigation on this matter. Our investigation is currently focused on discrete incidents in specific areas. We intend to keep federal authorities apprised of what we learn. Although, based on the facts currently known, we do not believe these matters will have a material impact on our business, we decided it was appropriate to disclose the internal investigation to our shareholders. Disclosing this matter is consistent with our commitment to being transparent with our key stakeholders and goes beyond what is required by law. We believe this is the right thing to do and in keeping with Walmart's core values and previous practices.
Tovar declined to point to any particular incident that may have led to the review. While he could not estimate potential liability, Tovar said it would be business as usual.
Yeah, based on the facts currently known, we do not believe these matters will have a material impact on our business.
The world's largest retailer, which operates in 28 countries, netted $419 billion in revenue last year. Walmart operates in Argentina, Brazil, Canada, Chile, China, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, India, Japan, Mexico, Nicaragua, and the United Kingdom. On its website, the company says it has no plans to expand into any other countries at this time. This is Ozarks at Large. Kristen Kaufman's career has been served mostly in the middle of the corporate world. She's held upper management positions with companies like Hewlett-Packard and United Health Group. For the past 4 years, she's worked with the company she founded, Alignment Incorporated. That career has meant travel, and that travel has provided her the opportunities to meet thousands of people. A couple dozen of those chance meetings form the basis for her book, Is This Seat Taken? Random Encounters That Change Your Life. She talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the book last week. Kaufman, a native of Hot Springs, writes about small interactions that didn't dramatically alter her life, but conversations that had subtle messages she says she could learn from.
You know, it's interesting when I've talked about this book to other people, they've made that very, very same observation. Gosh, did you meet somebody and then you had $1 million lot, you know, windfall from that meeting? And I'm saying, no, that's not the purpose of this book. The purpose of this book was to highlight that the incidental meetings that we have with strangers that cross our paths are really not incidental. They are placed in our lives for a reason. And the reason may not even come to fruition or come to even our awareness until many years later. And then we go back and we think about it and we think, wow, when I met that taxi driver and he said XYZ, wow, what an impact that had, you know, in the recesses of my mind. And then, of course, it surfaces later.
Many of these encounters are based on travel because you traveled so much when you were with companies. Airport lounges, airplanes, taxis. That travel opens you up to meeting so many different people of so many different types.
Yes, it does. And yet there are also stories in the book, since you've read it, you know, that are also the incidental meetings of everyday life. The grocery store clerk, you know, there's a story in there about William, who is actually all of these are authentic, true stories of people that are real live people. Some of them have deceased and others are still with us. William is actually a grocery store clerk in my grocery store back in Dallas, Texas, who I've gone to that grocery store for almost 30 years. And the effect that he has on me every time I go because of his attitude, the way he approaches his job. And I wanted to write about him. I wanted to put a face to the name, you know.
What do you take away from this relationship with William?
You know, William, and that actually, to be honest, is his name, and that's why I entitled the chapter William's Way. William is a challenged young man. This is probably the only position that he could have in today's world because of his situation. And the way he approaches his job is very much being present in the moment, which is a core pillar of my book. He approaches each person that he meets as if it's the first or potentially even the last time he's going to see those people. He is very patient with some very demanding people. You know, the area that I live in, everybody in the world is on such a fast pace right now. We're so impatient. We're always in a hurry. And William just, he greets these people with such a sense of presence, a sense of patience, and almost gratitude for having the job at all. And so what I write about him is just that. And I try to describe him in a way that people will relate, that you probably are running up against Williams every day of your life, but you may not be paying attention to it because you're not awake and you may not be present in the moment. And that's the reason why I wanted to highlight him in particular. It doesn't have to be some catastrophic or catapulting engagement with somebody in seat 5E on the airplane, which is another story I write. It could be just your postman or your yard man or the grocery store clerk.
One of the first encounters you mentioned, maybe it is the first, is a taxi driver.
Yes.
Who has come from the Ukraine
yes.
to the United States. And you mentioned by the time you were out of the taxi, you realized how brave he was.
Yes.
Because as a teenager, he knew he wanted to leave.
Yes.
That he saw life was hard, there was much alcoholism where he was, and to get ahead, to work for himself, he had to come to the U.S. How
yes.
did that change? Because when you got in the taxi, you were just ready to get somewhere.
Yes. Yes. You know, and New York in particular and most metropolitan areas are full of taxi drivers like that. They are full because so many times people are immigrating to the United States for a better life. And I was absolutely humbled by the bravery that this particular man must have had to pick up and leave everything he knew and his family to come to America, right, where he did not speak the language. He did not have a vocation that would translate into a metropolitan area. He was a grower of food, mm-hmm. right? And yet he did come. He did take the test that he needed to take. He did learn the language, and he has built an incredible life for himself. So what I took away was, of course, the bravery. I was incredibly humbled. I actually felt like a glutton when I got out of that taxi because so many of us in America, we just take for granted so much of what we've been given. And it was a very humbling experience. And so that's what I took away. And that's why I started with that story. Because as a global traveler, taxi drivers they're pervasive. Everybody has an interaction with a cab driver.
It's one thing to have these encounters. It's another level to realize that there's something to be learned. And then it's another level to admitting whether it actually did change you. Because we've all had these encounters where we think, I should be grateful for what I have because I've come into contact with someone who has it worse than I do or something like that.
Yeah.
But then to actually put that into practice.
Yes.
You know, and not 24 hours later be upset because you're on roaming on your cell phone or something like that.
Yes. You know, that is such an interesting point because, again, as I've traveled around talking about the book, you're spot on. So many people, if they want to share an encounter, typically they want to share an encounter with a notable person,
mm-hmm.
you know, someone that is a CEO or a famous movie star or somebody who has some sort of cachet around their name. There's not a single person in this book that has that sort of cachet. These are everyday people just like you and me. And you're right. Very few people have ever admitted that these people actually have oftentimes a much greater effect on our lives than the famous people that we meet, you know?
Well, it may be a situation where it's not just one of these random encounters you've had change, but it's over time,
yes.
the accumulation.
Yes, the culmination of
right.
it. And, you know, that's the other point that, there are three big points that I was trying to get across in the book. One was being present in the moment. One was staying awake to these moments, right, so that you do connect the dots, so to speak, that interaction did in fact happen for a reason, because I don't believe in accidents. So I don't believe that these incidental meetings are in fact incidental. And then the third point, which is the point we're actually coming into now, is that we are all connected. We are all connected as part of this dance of humanity, so to speak. And, you know, I believe that we are here on this planet to teach and or to learn at various points in our lives, through every moment in our lives. And so through these connections of all of these random people, they absolutely can teach me something. And perhaps through my random encounters, I might be teaching something myself to someone else. So that's the other point, is that this human network, you know, we're wired to interact with each other, right? Whether we are extroverted or introverted, it really is irrelevant. We are wired to interact in some way, shape, or form with each other.
My favorite story is the one you title Mr. Fancy Pants.
Oh, yes.
You're in an airport bar, and I take it it's one that you've connected through several times.
Oh, yes. It is the American Airlines Admiral Club in LaGuardia.
Okay. And so the man behind the bar is someone that you're somewhat familiar
yes.
with.
Yes.
You see him from time to time.
I do.
And then this fellow, and we've all been by this person.
Oh, yes.
At an airport bar, if you frequent airport bars, it's this fellow who comes in and he's very self-important and wants you to know he's important.
Absolutely.
But this conversation, he starts to open up, and this conversation that he has, and the bartender interjects himself and really says something beautiful.
Yes.
That just kind of stops the moment.
Yes. Well, you know, Mr. Fancy Pants, which, like you say, we know a million of these people, mm-hmm. right? And especially if you're a corporate executive like I was for so many years, you know, they're very prevalent. And this, he was unhappy, though. Bottom line, this executive, all of the trappings and all of the fixings of a corporate career and all the money and material wealth that it brought, he still was vacuous. There was a void in his life. And he made the comment, I wish someone would love me if I lived in a tent. If I lived in a tent. And the bartender, you know, said, gosh, but would you love yourself if you lived in a tent? And it was this moment, you know, you could have heard a pin drop, literally. Not really, but, you know, it was, yeah. There was just this pregnant pause. And I am certain that that Mr. Fancy Pants walked away from that conversation with questions in his mind. Trying to reestablish what was really of value to him, what was really important to him, and for the bartender to say it with such conviction that he was happy in his job, and he knew that all he had was the present moment, and he knew that the people that he interacted with at that bar were people that perhaps would never cross his path again, and yet he had an opportunity at that moment to affect that life, and he does it every day and loves it, right? It was pretty powerful. Right? And never will make the money that Mr. Fancy Pants right. made. But that was not important to him.
Most of the encounters are of a positive nature. You do write about one when you and your sister got into real estate and
yes.
it turned sour because
yes.
the person you rented to, who you trusted,
yes,
ended up manufacturing methamphetamines.
Oh, yes.
But you still took something away from that that you thought could improve your life.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to tell you, it's, as I was saying earlier, you know, it's such a – if it were not such a sad, true story, mm-hmm. it would make for a great dark comedy. It mm-hmm. really would. It was such a tragic situation. And, you know, never in my life, Kyle, would I have ever expected my father to call me and say, you know – he was found cooking to meth in the kitchen. You know, I thought maybe cooking spaghetti or something, but meth, I mean, I don't know. It's just never would have expected that. Well, what I took away from that were several things. You know, obviously judgment is really important in life. And I think oftentimes I'll own this. You know, I can be very naive when in meeting people and expecting and wanting the best from them. And oftentimes we are disappointed. So choices are critical in our life, the choices that we make, both from Larry, the gentleman that I wrote about, as well as my own choice on and judgment call of whether or not I could and should trust this man, right? What did I take away from that? That's what I took away from it. Choices are imperative, whether we are, you know, running a $3 billion business unit for Hewlett-Packard or whether we are leasing rental property in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Choices are important as equally for Larry as for me. So that was the takeaway on that one.
You and I are about the same age.
Yes. I'm a little older.
A little bit, but not
yeah.
much. If you took anyone from age 20 to about our age, of course you're going to change, probably, in some manner, philosophically, politically. But do you think these random encounters have changed how you view things? And I'm not asking necessarily for specifics, but how you view something politically or philosophically or spiritually?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. And I think two things. I think that most of our answers, all of our answers, I'll be even more bold, all of our answers to life are within us. We are spiritual beings living a life on the planet, right? So the answers are within us. And yet, these interactions with other people going through the same experiences and the same journey, because we are all human beings on this planet, absolutely help to reveal those truths that perhaps have been buried due to societal pressure, due to expectations that we place on ourselves, due to just the realities of being, you know, in the world that we're in, right? So absolutely, they have changed my perspective, and even more importantly, they have revealed and strengthened and validated perhaps beliefs that I had repressed because of my corporate career and whatever it was that I felt at the time was more pressing or more important.
How important is it that we talk to and meet people who are not like us?
Oh, I find it imperative because, you know, there's this terrible little cliche called PLU. People have used this term to me before, people like us. And when I hear that, people like us, I understand what they mean. There is a comfort being around people that are like us. And yet it also bristles the hair on my back of my neck because I want to say, my goodness, the world is, you know, a banquet, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's just try everything and let's meet everyone because they are teachers. They are teachers and we are teachers, right? And some of the greatest lessons that I ever had, Kyle, were people I never even met. There's a story about the couple in India. Mm-hmm. You know, I never even met them. They were as disparate from me as any humans could be, right? Living on a platform amidst poverty on the edge of the Ganges, right? And yet that story, I was asked just the other day what was one of my favorite stories. That has to be one of my most pivotal and most favorite stories just because of the, to your point, just the vast difference, right, of how that interaction happened and the effect it had on me. It was tremendous.
Kristen Kaufman is the author of the book, Is This Seat Taken? Random Encounters That Change Your Life. A native of Hot Springs, she now lives in Dallas. She talked with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums last week. You can learn more at kristenkaufman.com. And it's time for our giveaway question now. Our winner today will receive a signed copy of Kristen Kaufman's book, Is This Seat Taken? Random Encounters That Change Your Life, plus 2 Malco Movie Theater passes and 2 tickets to the Manhattan Transfer Holiday Show at Walton Arts Center on December 15th. And our question for today is, on this day in 1901, the first transatlantic radio signal traveled more than 2,000 miles from England to Canada. My question is, who transmitted this first transatlantic signal? Was it A, Thomas Edison, B, Italian physicist Marconi, or C, Alexander Graham Bell? You can call up with your answers at 1-800-522-5823. That's 1-800-522-KUAF. All the best.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 12th of December, 2011. It's the birthday of Gustave Flaubert, 1821, Rouen, France, the perfectionist who said, "I spent the morning putting in a comma and the afternoon removing it." He spent 5 years writing Madame Bovary, came out in 1856, the story of Emma, doctor's wife, dissatisfied with her life, wants to experience the passion and excitement and luxury she's only read about in novels. She has 2 long-term love affairs. She mounts up insurmountable debt and ultimately takes her own life with arsenic. In Chapter 9, Madame Bovary, he wrote, "Deep down in her heart, she was waiting and waiting for something to happen. Like a shipwrecked mariner, she gazed out wistfully over the wide solitude of her life. If so be, she might catch the white gleam of a sail away on the dim horizon. She knew not what it would be, this longed-for bark, what wind would waft it to her, or to what shores it would bear her away. She knew not if it would be burdened with anguish or freighted with joy. But every morning, when she awoke, she hoped it would come that day." The book was banned by the government, and they hauled Flaubert up on charges of offending public morality. He was narrowly acquitted, and Madame Bovary was published in book form 2 months later, and the scandal of the trial was only great publicity, contributing to its success. Flaubert wrote, "It is a delicious thing to write, to be no longer yourself, but to move in an entire universe of your own creating. Today, for instance, as man and woman, both lover and mistress, I rode in a forest on an autumn afternoon under the yellow leaves, and I was also the horses, the leaves, the wind, the words my people uttered, even the red sun that made them almost close their love-drowned eyes." It's the birthday of the painter Edvard Munch, born in Luton, Norway, 1863. His mother, his favorite sister, both died of TB when he was a boy. His father and brother died as well. Another sister went mad. Monk wrote, "I inherited two of mankind's most frightful enemies, the heritage of consumption and insanity. Illness and madness and death were the black angels that stood at my cradle." Most famous painting, of course, was The Scream in 1893. He had a nervous breakdown. Monk gave up drinking. His life settled down. But his later paintings lacked the intensity of his earlier tormented ones. And it's the birthday of the playwright John Osborne, London, 1929, who wrote Look Back in Anger, wrote it in less than a month in 1956, trying to portray the harsh reality of working-class life in England. Here's a poem for today by John Stone, Three for the Mona Lisa. It is not what she did at 10 o'clock last evening accounts for the smile. It is that she plans to do it again tonight. Only the mouth, all those years, ever letting on. It's not the mouth exactly. It's not the eyes exactly either. It's not even exactly a smile. But whatever, I second the motion. Three for the Mona Lisa by John Stone. Music from Apartment 8, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Constant Contact, offering email marketing tools and resources to help market small businesses during the holiday season. Learn more at constantcontact.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And my question for you today was, who transmitted the first transatlantic signal on this day in 1901? The three options were A. Thomas Edison, B. Marconi, or C. Alexander Graham Bell. And the correct answer is B. Marconi. The message was simply the Morse code signal for the letter S that traveled more than 2,000 miles from Cornwall, England to Newfoundland, Canada. Our listeners who gave us the correct answers, your names have been put into the ceramic cow. We'll pick a winner soon, and the winner will get a signed copy of Kristen Kaufman's book, Is This Seat Taken?, plus two Malco movie theater passes and two tickets to the Manhattan Transfer Holiday Show at Walton Arts Center on December 15th. The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway will be held Thursday, December 15th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. This drawing is your chance to win a gift from one of many KUAF underwriters and program sponsors. Participants include Opera in the Ozarks, Arcega Espresso Cafes, Deborah Dubois Massage Therapist, and Newton Jewelers. Registration and more information are available on the web at kuaf.com. Carmike 14 Cinema in Fort Smith and Ballet in Cinema will feature Sleeping Beauty with the Royal Ballet live Thursday, December 15th, with an encore performance on Tuesday, January 10th. Tickets and more information are available on the web at carmike.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Prosperity, that is, northwest of Harrison. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar. Tomorrow, Kyle Kellums will be back with Antoinette Grajeda with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks for listening and have a great week.